This podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Legend of the Bones. Following in the footsteps of giants, Legend of the Bones is a chimera. A mix of old-school tabletop RPG and dark fantasy storytelling. As its name might suggest, in Legend of the Bones, the dice rule. There'll be no rerolls, no fudging the dice, no metacurrency. The roll of the bones will determine the character's destiny, and no one will be spared their fate. None shall escape the destiny of Bone. Last time on Legend of the Bones. In a clandestine attempt to enter the library vault at the monastery of Inisgwyn, the companions entered the crypt via a secret passage, built by the monks as an escape route in the event that raiders should attack the island. Here they encountered a rock beetle, a monstrous insect that was feeding on one of the corpses. In order to progress, the party had no choice but to fight the creature, during which Canute was badly injured. After the beetle was slain, and Lena had healed the warrior, the companions proceeded on through a second secret passageway, but became obstructed by a door which appeared to have been deliberately wedged shut. Valen had an idea, and with Talion harvested the rock beetle's mandibles and some of its saliva, which the mage explained was a powerful acid. Beric used the acid-coated mandible to free the door, but upon opening the portal, the warrior set off a trap, releasing an unspeakable guardian in the chamber beyond. Chapter 36, Part 1, Day 37, Night. Party status: Beric, 28 out of 28 hit points. Lena, 20 out of 20 hit points. Valen, 15 out of 15 hit points. Talion, 21 out of 21 hit points. Canute, 16 out of 24 hit points. Jenna, 6 out of 6 hit points. Spells available. Valen has memorized Push, Soothe, and Revive. Talion has memorized Poetic Prose, Resolve, and Pitch. Lena can pray for one first level miracle and one second level miracle. Beric peered into the gloom, straining to make out the details of the chamber into which he had just stepped. If it had not been for the faint glow of Jenna's torch in the passageway behind him, he would have been standing in pitch black, and he immediately felt foolish having not taken the torch himself. As it was, he could only just make out the shelves which lined the walls, crammed as they were with hundreds, if not thousands, of rolled up parchments. Then there was a rattling sound close ahead, like that of a chain, followed by a low hissing, and he caught sight of something moving. At that moment, Beric could hear Canute and Jenna enter the room behind him, and the chamber was suddenly flooded with light from the novitiate's torch. Beric cursed in alarm, for just a few feet ahead, a grotesque thing was bearing down on him. It had the appearance of an emaciated man, its greyed skin stretched taut over its bones. Its outstretched arms ended in clawed hands, and there was an insatiable hunger in its milky iris eyes, as the lips of its mouth peeled back to reveal sharp yellow teeth. Entering combat. The trap that was triggered when Beric pulled open the secret door was a wire that, through a series of pulleys, released a pin that fastened a set of manacles to the wall. Those chains were restraining a ghoul, which has been installed here as a guardian to the vault. The ghoul is a two-hit dice monster, but I must not be fooled into thinking this creature is weak. It has an ascending armor class of 13 and gets a plus 1 to hit. So far, not too bad. But here is where it gets nasty. The ghoul can make 3 attacks per round, 2 claws and 1 bite, each dealing 1 to 3 points of damage, and any hit requires the target to make a successful save versus paralysis or be incapacitated for 2d4 turns. Time to roll the ghoul's hit points. 12. That's above the half min out. The ghoul is not surprised, but let's see if the party is. Usually, a roll of 1 or 2 would mean that they are. But given the darkness moments before, and the close proximity of the creature to Beric, I'm going to rule that the party will be surprised on a roll of 1 to 4. Rolling a d6. A 4. Okay then. Round 1. No initiative as the party is surprised. As Beric is in front, the ghoul will target the warrior. I have 3 different coloured d20s to hand. The ghoul will need to roll 14s or more to hit. Here we go. A 4, a 19, and a 1. The ghoul lunges at Beric, slashing the warrior on the neck for 2 points of damage. But as it goes to bite the big man, it collides with Beric's shield. It stumbles backward and falls on its backside. The ghoul will miss its next turn. However, Beric will need to roll a 13 or more to save versus paralysis or be incapacitated. An 11. Beric feels his muscles stiffen and he is unable to move. Beric will be paralysed for 5 turns, which equates to 50 minutes. Round 2. Again, no initiative this time because the ghoul misses its turn. Only Canute and Jenna are thus far in the room. The novitiate fumbles for her holy symbol and will try to repel the undead creature. As a first level cleric, Jenna will need to roll a 9 or more on 2d6 to turn the ghoul. A 6. In her shock and panic at the attack on Beric, the novitiate cannot focus her mind sufficiently. Canute draws his sword and attempts to strike the prone creature. He will need to roll a 9 or more. But with an 8, the ghoul rolls to the side at the last moment, and the Skarne warrior's blade clangs as it hits the flagstone floor. Round 3. Initiative. The ghoul. A 3. The party. A 1. Rolling for the ghoul's target. It's Jenna. Seeing her weakness, the ghoul picks itself up and rushes at the novitiate. This could be real danger for Jenna. The ghoul will need to roll 10s or more with its 3 attacks. A 19, a 2, and a 15. For a total of 3 points of damage. As the creature slashes Jenna across the chest before biting her neck. She screams in fear and pain. Jenna will need to pass 2 save versus paralysis, needing to roll a 14 or more each time. A 15 and a 3. Jenna is paralysed for 6 turns. At that moment, Lena, Valen, and Talion also enter the chamber. Lena reaches for her holy symbol. As a 4th level cleric, she automatically turns undead of 2 hit dice or lower. The ghoul cowers in the presence of the cleric's divine righteousness. Unable to defend itself, Canute steps forward and hacks the creature down until its bloodied corpse moves no more. In truth, with Lena present, the ghoul was never going to present a significant threat to anyone other than Jenna. Having said that, the paralysis that has befallen Beric and the novitiate does present an inconvenience. The paralysis can be removed by means of a cure-light wounds miracle. But of course, having recently healed Canute, Lena can only pray for one more such miracle. Given Beric's size, no one is going to be able to carry him, so I think it makes sense that Lena would try to free the big man. The cleric will need to roll a 17 or less for her prayer roll. A 14. Whilst I'm here behind the screen, I also need to determine some timings. The time now is midnight, and the monks will rise at 4 o'clock for the ritual of matins. At 5 o'clock, a small group of monks will go down into the crypt to pray at the statue of Naya for the souls of the dead. At this point, they will discover the dead rock beetle, which has clearly been slain. I'm going to say that there will be a 75% chance that this group will be led by Wiglaf, or a senior monk who is loyal to him. Let's work that out now. Rolling percentile dice. A 0.5. Well, with such a definitive result, I'm going to say that it will be Wiglaf himself. Okay, so the party have 5 hours, or 30 game turns, to get into the vault, find the information they need, and get out. Also, unless they can remove the dead rock beetle, they will probably need to get off the island, as Wiglaf will soon discover that the vault has been compromised. So on that basis, I will be keeping close track of the turns as we go. Actions such as searching, resolving a puzzle, or reading documents will take a turn, and tests can be repeated or continued for as long as the PCs want to spend time on the activity. Okay, so while Lena has been busy praying for Beric to be free of the paralysis, I'm going to say that Valen and Talion spend two turns searching through the scrolls and manuscripts. For each of those turns, I'm going to say that there is a 20% chance each that they find something of use. First, Valen, rolling percentile dice. An 18 and a 51. Okay, I'll come to what the mages found in a moment. Now Talion. A 34 and a 61. The bard is not so lucky. I'm going to rule that Valen has found a spell scroll. I will roll randomly for the magic discipline, the level and the spell. A d3 for the discipline. A 1, that's hedge magic, which is good for our mage. Now a d6 for the level. A 4. And finally a d12 for the spell. An 11. Let's see. Oh okay, this is good. Valen has found a scroll of Dragon's Breath. This is a homebrew spell, in which a supernatural fog spews from the caster's mouth, filling a space of up to 240 square yards within 10 rounds. Any creature in the fog has their visibility reduced to 3 feet, regardless of infravision. In addition, the fog could be used to fill a gulf or chasm, forming a cloud bridge which can support the weight of a human-sized creature. The spell lasts for one turn per level of the caster, after which the fog dissipates. For now, Valen will keep the scroll, rather than attempting to transcribe it into his spellbook. Okay, so now it's time to throw a little more chaos into the situation. Cadfael told the party about the existence of a second vault key, hidden in the scrollarium, which Canute will be searching for. But is it still there? Time to ask the Oracle. A 1. That's a no and. Now that gives me an idea. Chapter 36, Part 2, Day 38, Midnight. Party status: Beric, 26 out of 28 hit points. Lena, 20 out of 20 hit points. Valen, 15 out of 15 hit points. Talion, 21 out of 21 hit points. Canute, 16 out of 24 hit points. Jenna, 3 out of 6 hit points, and is paralyzed. Spells available. Valen has memorized Push, Soothe, and Revive. Talion has memorized Poetic Prose, Resolve, and Pitch. Lena can pray for one second level miracle. Beric grimaced at the pins and needles as he vigorously rubbed his arms, in an attempt to shake off the after effects of being paralyzed. Still, he could not complain. He was free again, and he was thankful for it. He kicked the ghoul's corpse with his boot, and took a moment to observe how the creature had been released from its bonds on the wall to the right. Kier would have found the trap, he thought, and he suddenly felt a lump in his throat at the memory of his friend. Lena was speaking softly to the still paralyzed Jenna, offering words of comfort and reassurance as the frozen novitiate stared blankly ahead, her mouth rigid in a rictus of shock and pain. Meanwhile, Valen and Talion were rummaging through the piles of scrolls on the shelves, until Valen suddenly called his countryman over and began to speak to him excitedly in their own language. Beric composed himself and took in the rest of his surroundings. The scrollarium was roughly a square chamber, some 40 feet across. In the far left-hand corner from the hidden passage was a circular stone staircase leading up, and in the centre of the room was a pair of nondescript desks placed back to back. A faint, musty smell filled Beric's nostrils. At that moment, Canute approached the big man. The warrior had been searching for the vault key in the location instructed by Cadfael.
"It's not here,"
he stated flatly. The Scarni had made it plain his distaste for skulking about like thieves, but nevertheless, he understood that they had little choice. Beric cursed in response.
In any case, it would not help us. Look.
Canute gestured towards the left wall. Instead of a heavy oak door that they had been led to expect, the vault was sealed by a great circular bronze disc, 6 feet in diameter. Upon the door was embossed an 8-pointed sun, filling the entire surface. At each point was a dial, above which was displayed a different icon.
Wiglaf must have had the door changed, Beric commented. The stuck door? That thing?
He kicked the corpse again.
The abbot must truly want to keep people out.
Lena appeared beside them, her face full of indignation.
He has gone too far, she stated vehemently. To make use of the restless dead is to betray everything the Nine represent.
There was disgust in her voice.
And this poor soul, she said, looking at the ghoul,
and which, for the first time they noticed, was wearing a filthy and torn monk's habit.
How on earth did they befall such a fate?
The two warriors had no answer. Instead, Beric gestured towards the circular portal.
What do you make of this?
He asked of the cleric. Lena approached the bronze door, and after a moment, answered.
Why, it is the Blessed Sun, of course.
She looked back at the two men.
The symbol of the Nine.
The lock mechanism of the new vault door is designed to test the theological knowledge of anyone attempting to open it. In this sense, only Lena or Jenna, if she'd not been paralysed, will have any chance of working it out. The dial, at each point of the star, can be turned to change the image which is displayed there. There are 8 possible images, and the correct image must be selected that symbolises the deity which is represented by that point of the star. Solving this puzzle will require both intelligence and wisdom, so Lena will need to pass checks against both in order to succeed in unlocking the vault. These are critical roles. If Lena fails either, then the companions may be forced to undertake a far more risky endeavour. First up, Lena will need to roll equal or less than her intelligence of 11 to figure out how the locking mechanism works. 4. So far, so good. Next, I will make a wisdom check to see whether Lena can match the correct image to each of the gods. The cleric's wisdom is 17, so she has the odds in her favour. Here is the roll. 1! Well, it doesn't get better than that. However, the door is also trapped. The dials must be turned in a specific order, otherwise the scrollarium, in which the companions stand, will be filled with a poisonous gas. I will make another wisdom check for the cleric, to see whether she chooses the correct order. 17! That was close.
Chapter 36, Part 3, Day 38. Half a bell past midnight. Party status. The party status is unchanged. Lena stared intently at the huge bronze door, her brows knitted together, and whilst no one said anything, she felt a self-imposed weight of expectation upon her shoulders. There was no obvious handle or lock, and only a great hinge on the left gave any indication that the disc may open. Valen and Talion had ceased their searching, and the two Wayland men had joined the others in front of the portal. There was something not right about the Blessed Sun. She recognised the images at each point, of course. The Leaf of Erda, the Owl of Nia, the Scales of Mithra, the Wolf of Hernoth, and so on. But
they are not aligned to the correct spoke,
she said, thinking aloud.
The images,
she explained, seeing her companions' confused faces.
They are in the wrong places.
So we changed them,
Beric said in response, walking up to the door and placing his hand upon the dial at the west point.
What should this be?
That should be the Wind of Torven. But wait,
Lena said sharply. Beric took his hand away from the dial
as much in surprise at the cleric's tone than anything else.
"What is it, Lena?"
Valen asked, placing a hand on Lena's arm in a gesture of solidarity. She looked at the mage, and then back at the door.
"It might be nothing, but it's almost too easy."
There was a pregnant pause, and Lena's expression was one of intense thought.
"The scripture of creation is very specific about the order in which the gods came into being. It may not be important, but..."
The cleric's voice trailed off.
"You are right to question,"
the mage said supportively.
"So which came first?"
Beric asked.
"Solon, but he is the hub. He shone his divine light upon the world, and from the bare earth sprang the shoots of life, and with them his wife, Erda, was born. She should be at the North Point."
The cleric stepped forward, and placing her hand upon the dial, turned it until the image of a leaf was shown.
"Then springs of water bubbled up, forming rivers and lakes, and Vanir was born."
Lena continued, this time turning the dial at the South Point to the image of three wavy lines. The cleric carried on in this way, moving between the dials and naming the gods, although it was unclear to the others whether she spoke aloud for her benefit or theirs. She finished at the southeast point.
"And after knowledge, Naya gave birth to Kayla, so that man might know feeling."
Lena turned the dial until the engraving of a heart could be seen, and as it slotted into place, the sound of a heavy bolt moving echoed about the chamber, and the door slowly swung open, revealing nothing but pitch darkness. No light from Canute's torch passed the threshold of the portal. The Skarne stepped forward, but still no light penetrated the vault. The warrior turned to the others.
"What sorcery is this?"
Balin approached until he was just a couple of feet from the threshold.
"This is not an enchantment. I would sense it."
"Yes," Lena agreed, stepping up beside the mage. "I have heard of miracles which bring an impenetrable darkness, like the curse Beric experienced at Kerridu, only permanent."
"So what can be done?"
Canute asked, for while he held Lena in high regard, her gods and their power were a mystery to him. But before Lena could reply, Valen, who was still peering into the darkness, spoke.
"There is something else. Look there."
The companions crowded around the entrance. High up in the darkness was a small glass sphere of white. A light, yet like a solitary distant star in a vast blanket of night, it cast no illumination. Companions have come to the final obstacle that secures the vault, a miracle of continual darkness. This is a third level miracle, and thus its reverse and counter miracle, continual light, is beyond Elena's ability to pray for. The ball of light is in fact an enchanted moonstone, which itself has been imbued with continual light, and encased in a sphere of black glass. The moonstone's light cannot be completely veiled, but the sphere prevents the gemstone from countering the darkness in the room. This artifact, which is suspended from the 20-foot-high ceiling, is designed to be an emergency light source for the abbot, should his usual methods of negating the continual darkness fail. The question is, how will the PCs overcome this obstacle? My initial thought was that Lena could use her remaining second-level miracle to pray for mind sight. But checking how I designed this homebrew miracle, I was reminded that it only benefits characters who are blind, and this continual darkness affects a location rather than an individual. So I think I have three potential solutions. Firstly, the companions could continue to search the Scholarium for something which would aid them. But this would consume more time, and there would be no guarantee of success. Secondly, a projectile could be used to smash the sphere. But given its size being smaller than a clenched fist, and the darkness impairing spatial awareness, I will rule that the sphere would have an effective armor class of 19. In this case, Talion would have the best chance of success, given his +3 dexterity bonus. And of course, it could be attempted many times. The final option would be for Talion to cast the bard spell Pitch in an attempt to shatter the glass.
Before I choose, I need to determine whether the companions might even think about breaking the glass sphere, as it's not obvious. Valen has the highest intelligence at 16, so I'm going to make a check for the mage, but I'm going to apply a -2 penalty. A 7. Okay, so as for which option? Well, given Talion's intelligence, casting pitch would offer the best chance of immediate success, so I'm going to go with that in the first instance. The bard will need to roll a 14 or less to succeed. A 12. The companions stared up at the mysterious white globe, seemingly suspended in the void. It neither pulsed nor moved. It simply was.
"What is it?"
Beck asked.
"I know not exactly,"
Valen replied, not taking his eyes off the sphere.
"But it has arcane power. That is for certain. I can sense it,"
he added.
"I believe that some enchanted light is contained within. Perhaps, if we were to break the sphere, it might counteract the darkness in the vault,"
the mage surmised.
"Good idea,"
Beric agreed.
"Talion, could you hit it with an arrow?"
The bard peered up at the sphere.
"I could, but I have a better idea," he said enigmatically. "I should stand back if I were you, and cover your ears."
Perplexed, the companions did as Talion instructed, moving back from the portal, and before they could object, the bard walked into the darkness, his form disappearing completely, as if a veil had been drawn over him. Then, after a moment, a glowing blue rune could be seen floating in the blackness, and Valen recognized it as the lines of the mystic tattoo upon the bard's brow. Without warning, an ear-splitting sound resonated from the vault, and despite their hands, the companions winced, for it was a strange, undulating timber, whose pitch stabbed like a blade against their eardrums, causing their heads to pound in pain. The note continued for what seemed like an age, although in truth it was only a few seconds, for suddenly there was the sound of breaking glass, and the vault was instantly flooded with white light, which for a moment stung their eyes. As they adjusted to the brightness, they could see the vault, like the Scrollarium, contained shelves crammed with books, scrolls and objects. And standing in the centre of the room was Talion, his runic tattoo still glowing blue. His right hand was held out, and resting in his palm was a glowing ball of light.
Thank you for listening to Legend of the Bones. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you like what you've heard, then please do consider giving it a positive review in your podcatcher of choice. Just one voice talent to thank in this episode. Returning in the role of Canute is the maestro himself, John Cohen, creator of Tale of the Manticore. I must once again also thank the wonderfully talented Jim Hurst, who created the audio for Talion's spell Pitch in this episode. Jim, you nail it every time. I'll put John and Jim's links in the show notes. You could also help by liking or reposting new episode announcements, or by recommending the show online or to a friend. You really can't beat the power of word of mouth. Alternatively, if you'd like to show your appreciation by buying me a metaphorical cup of tea, then I now have a Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com/legendofthebones. Any donations will go towards the show's running costs. I would also love to know what you think of the show, and I do respond to every message I receive. So with that in mind, you can contact me on X at Legend Bones, Blue Sky at Legend Bones, Mastodon at Legend Bones at ttrpg-hangout.social, Instagram at Legend of the Bones, email at legendofthebones@gmail.com, or go to legendofthebones.blogspot.com for show notes, house rules, character profiles, art, maps, and more. Join me next time to find out what awaits our adventurers as the bones decide their fate. None shall escape the destiny of bone.
Do you enjoy old school RPGs? Do you love stories of sword and sorcery? Are you tired of the typical actual plays and long, unedited podcasts? Then look no further than Legends from the Fireside, a hybrid storytelling RPG podcast. A podcast filled with tales of adventure and heroism, all at the mercy of the roll of the dice. There's no telling where the story will go and where we will end up. No life is sacred, and no one's survival is guaranteed. You can find the show on all major podcast platforms, and we hope you enjoy Legends from the Fireside.